sons.
Yeah, I was thinking about the parallels between your film and the Michael Mann film, The Insider, about the campaign against the cigarette company, about the against the tobacco companies.
I haven't seen that one, but yeah.
Well, it's about a bloke wants to expose the kind of goings on of the American cigarette companies. And in that film, I'm not sure how real it is, but it's based on a true story, whatever that means. But the character who wants to expose the goings on of the companies, he actually does come under, and kind of leading on from the question you asked just then, he kind of does actually come under physical threats.
Yeah.
He is actually terrorised by, he is actually physically terrorised, people go to his house, his life actually is in danger. And do you actually kind of get any kind of sniff at anything like that was going on behind the scenes?
I'm not aware of anything. I mean, I did once go out Hunts having, and when we came back to our vehicle, someone had broken into it and put a load of McDonald's leaflets in it. But that, you know, that was slightly intimidating because I wasn't, it wasn't my vehicle, so it wasn't registered in my name anyway. But I think McDonald's probably knew that if they tried anything like that in this country, actually it would backfire on them. I mean, you know, people's lives are genuinely in danger by multinational corporations in many countries around the world. You know, especially Colombia, where there's been a lot of trade unionists and environmentalists killed and so on. I think probably they'd be less likely to do it in this country just because they think they know that they would be less likely to get away with it. But yeah, so I don't know. It wasn't really a threat that I was afraid of at the time. So.
I was just going to ask you. How big was your group? Like, I mean, there was obviously the two of you, but like, outside of that, your team, there was quite a few people on the campaign.
Do you mean the group, London Greenpeace, that had the original campaign?
Well, that and then it was like sort of during the... during the actual
campaign.
Case itself.
It's slightly hard to put a figure on that. I mean, actually, most of the time, the groups were fairly small. There was like a core of people, maybe 10 people, that were regularly coming to meetings, but then wider than that, there would be people who would help with mail outs, and obviously many more people who would be involved with, you know, protests and pickets and so on. But yeah, never underestimate the ability of a small group to get things done and to you know, bring ideas and change to the public and to society. So.
I don't know if you already covered this, but did McDonald's offer you cash for the out-of-court settlement? Was there a lump sum offered to you and Dave?
They were offering a substantial out-of-court payment, but they wanted us to agree to a whole load of, restrictions, that conditions that we weren't willing to agree to, and in any event, having gone through that level of legal battle to get to that stage, we wanted to make sure that nobody else was put in a similar situation. So we wanted the undertaking from them that they wouldn't sue anybody else again, and they weren't prepared to give that, so it was all a no-go.
It's quite admirable. Thank you.
Well, thank you to everybody who was involved one of the things it's kind of easy to forget, actually, and watching that reminded me, was, you know, basically two-thirds of McDonald's UK stores were picketed on the Saturday after the verdict, which is quite amazing, really. And on top of that, there were other protests around the world. It was an amazing demonstration to McDonald's of how what they, the legal action they were taking, how it completely backfired, because they'd, you know, tried to stamp out this sort of fairly, this leaflet that had a fairly small distribution, and that had just exploded and gone all over the world. So it was, yeah, it was fantastic. Really. Hello.
It's not something you know much about, but I heard someone say something in the screening. So you challenged the European Court on like provision of legal aid for libel, is that right?
Yeah.
Did I understand that right?
That we We actually, I'm going to be trying to dredge my memory here because it's quite a while ago, but we brought a case under Article 6, which is the right to a fair trial, where we argued that that there should be legal aid available to assist with such a complex, well, to assist with the trial, and also under Article 10, freedom of expression, that the libel laws in the UK were preventing, you know, freedom of expression surrounding about multinational corporations and those in power, and then also on freedom of association, Article 11. And we were successful on part of those, the Article 6 and Article 10.
So I was just thinking about, like, changes to legal aid provisions now, and like, not that I know enough about how these things work, but, like, I guess I was just thinking about, like, how people would, like, reproduce similar sorts of campaigns and what, like, new obstacles are there, or, like, what changes to circumstances, like, because it often feels that when people make gains, people come in from elsewhere and sort of close up those spaces that people carve out. And I wondered how much you, as time has gone on, have observed, like those gains and how you maintain them, or I don't know.
The judgment in our case was quite technical, actually, and it specifically referred to the complexities of our case. And it was of limited use to other cases, but in fact, I have been told by various solicitors over the course of the years that they've either used the case or, you know, it's been helpful in some way. But I think that the current government has really had a sustained attack on both legal aid and access to justice for anyone but the very wealthy in the society, and I think it's extremely worrying. You know, people are being forced into situations where they have to plead guilty when they're not. They're being unable to, you know, defend their rights, and you know, basically the legal system is really blatantly now stacked in favour of the rich and powerful, and you know, it needs some serious fight back. I'm not quite sure what the latest is on barristers and solicitors going on strike. They were taking strike action for a while. I've not actually heard what the latest is, but I hope they're successful.
Did you have any prior knowledge of any law before you started the case? Did you learn everything from that case?
I knew a tiny bit from going to other court cases, but no, basically we were learning from starting from scratch. I didn't know anything about libel law at all, and yeah, we had to learn
everything. As you
learn everything, yeah. That was an interesting experience.
I was going to say, just to lead on from that, what would you say you gained from all those years of playing McDonald's, like personally, do you think you gained?
Oh, blimey. Sleepless nights, exhausted. I think we gained some amazing friendships with people who came to be witnesses in the case. And with people who were acting in solidarity. I think my brain's gone now.
That was amazing, because the stuff I was reading where, you know, there was the issue around sort of Latin America, was it? We had an issue with getting witnesses, or wasn't it? Didn't there quite a few people come forward in the end through that?
We had some witnesses that were based in the UK who gave evidence about what they'd seen in Brazil and Latin America. But the witnesses that were actually based in countries where there were tropical rainforests, we only had written witness statements, which don't carry as much weight as if the witness is there live to give evidence. So.
That was part of the investigators detained as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was Well, you see her in the film. Fran Tiller was one of the private investigators who was infiltrating the group. She ended up on a course with the sister of the filmmaker who made that documentary, and confided in her that she'd been involved in spying on London Greenpeace, and she felt really bad about it, at which point the woman said, oh, you know, by coincidence, my sister's making a documentary about her. It's really quite unbelievable. And so she came and talked on camera about her experiences. And she also gave evidence in the court case about how basically she thought what London Greenpeace was doing was perfectly reasonable, and that she didn't think that they should have been spied on by McDonald's. There's also, which isn't in that film, but I don't know, people may or may not be aware of it, that one of the people that's shown in the protests outside McDonald's head office and who was involved in London Greenpeace was in fact an undercover policeman. And in fact, there was a different undercover policeman involved in helping to write the leaflet as well. And I'm now part of a legal action against the police, suing the police for undercover relationships. Myself and seven other women have relationships with undercover policemen. Five different undercover policemen over a period spanning 25 years, and we only found out 3 years ago that the men that we had thought, you know, were our partners were in fact undercover policemen. So I'm involved in a court case about that at the moment. I don't know, people may have seen there's now a public inquiry as well into undercover policing. Which has just started.
I just want to ask if there's been changes to the libel law since the Supreme Court ruling.
I think there have been some minor changes. I'm not actually abreast with all the libel law, I'm afraid, but I think there were some. I'm sorry, I'm probably too tired to even remember what they are.
I just wanted to address how McDonald's, you know, entice children into the restaurant, which has always sickened me. And I don't know whether you're aware that Alder Hey here is a children's hospital with Ronald McDonald's House. What did McDonald's actually say about that in the case? Did they address how, you know, obviously the judge ruled in your favour and that side, but what did McDonald's say that they would do about anything like that? Because as far as I can see, they're still targeting children.
They do. They are still targeting children. They haven't stopped, and the government is doing nothing to stop children being targeted by corporations like McDonald's. When we were first sued by McDonald's, part of the process you get is disclosure of documents, and one of the things that McDonald's actually did was rather than disclose documents that talked about the reality of life at McDonald's, they gave us a whole load of propaganda about Tidy Britain Awards and there was something about the Queen Mother as well, I can't remember what it was now, but there was also a load of stuff about charitable works and hospitals in particular. And, you know, they very, very much use both the thing that you saw in there where they went to a children's playgroup and handed over a £500 donation, which is absolutely peanuts to them, and they get tax relief on it. They use it as part of their marketing. There's, you know, basically the whole system is set up so that corporations can bombard us with advertising on a daily basis, get tax relief on it, and promote their way of thinking, and we are left with, you know, all we've got, all ordinary people have got by way of communication is like leaflets and talking to each other. And I mean, now we've got the internet and Twitter, but, you know, that's what we're up against, is a completely unequal fight of views and ideas from, you know, what kind of society you want to see, and, you know, McDonald's are targeting children from a very young age. They're targeting children when they're vulnerable and in hospital, when they're unwell. And you know, it's a hard battle to counter that propaganda.
In a McDonald's, it's just sickening, isn't it?
It is. It shouldn't be allowed. Basically, I mean, you know, you wouldn't. You know, people would be shocked if like a cigarette company was, you know, opened a children's hospital. But actually, McDonald's food is very unhealthy. And if you do eat it on a regular basis, as the High Court found on appeal, you do suffer a very real risk of heart disease. And, you know, there's a growing obesity epidemic, diabetes, and all of those conditions are being promoted by these corporations constantly promoting this type of diet. And they're not the ones that are going to bear the costs. You know, it's ordinary people who bear the costs in their shortened lives, and it's society that bears the costs in you know, providing the NHS to cure people and assist them to live with these conditions. Sorry, I'm getting a bit tired, but, you know, really, they should just be stopped. They shouldn't be allowed to promote this kind of junk the whole time.
And from one of our other people online, they've asked, do you hear much from the other Greenpeace group these days?
The Greenpeace groups they've got common origins. They were both set up in the early 1970s to campaign on environmental and specifically anti-nuclear originally. And there were autonomous groups set up around the world. And one of them, the Vancouver Greenpeace, decided to become the big international Greenpeace, but London Greenpeace decided to remain independent and autonomous and has done so ever since. So we're not beyond the original connection, we're not actually...
Are you still in touch with the people in that group?
In London Greenpeace? Yeah. Some of them, yeah. Not all of them, but some of them, yeah.
And if we have a question here and then maybe one more?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I was just going to ask, obviously these corporations are bad, standing, you know, we know that, but do you propose any way that they could be, you know, broken down and removed from society? Apart from anarchism, you know, wholesale.
Well, I think that's the point, really. The point is that people, I think we all need to decide what kind of society we want. Do we want a society that's run for the benefit of a tiny minority of the population, which is the kind of society we've got now, where, you know, 1% of the population have got massive wealth that's ever increasing, and the rest of us are, you know, left fighting over the crumbs? Or do we want a society where everybody has respect and dignity, and we've got a healthy environment, and, you know, we are free to live the kind of lives that are, you know, that are what we actually want to do rather than what we're driven to do because we have to keep a roof over our heads. And for me, I want to see a society where everybody has a say in how society's run and where it's run for the benefit of everybody, not for a tiny minority. So I think we essentially have to get rid of huge corporations like McDonald's.
So. So if you could tell us a bit more about the public inquiry that's going to... You're talking about the public inquiry into...
I'm just trying to think where to start. So about 3 years ago, it might even be 4 years ago now, revelations started hitting the mainstream media about the infiltration of environmental and social justice groups by undercover police officers. The main one initially was Mark Kennedy, who'd infiltrated the environmental movement and had been responsible for the serious miscarriage of justice related to campaigners who were planning to occupy a power station to draw attention to the issue of climate change. And initially the police response was, oh, this is just one rogue officer, this wasn't supposed to happen. He, you know, the fact that he'd had a 7-year relationship came out into the open, and that he'd had other relationships too. And yeah, that, the line was very much from the police, oh yeah, this is just one rogue officer. And then we started exposing the other cases of these undercover officers having relationships. And gradually more and more has come out into the open about their use of the identities of children who died when they were still children, without the knowledge or consent of the families. And then the information came out about the infiltration of the Stephen Lawrence campaign, the family campaign, and I'm trying to think, and other family campaigns for justice over the deaths of loved ones at the hands of the police or through racist murders. And I think, you know, people became increasingly shocked at the lengths that undercover policing was going to in this country, and initially couldn't believe it. And then there's basically so much sort of outcry that the state has dealt with it is by saying that there will be a public inquiry into undercover policing. And that's kicked off in July. It officially opened in July. And it's expected to last about 3 years, and it's going to look into not just political undercover policing, but also wider undercover policing, and it will look into relationships and the spying on family justice campaigns. And they've just done the process of inviting people to apply for core participant status and notify the inquiry if they want to give evidence. And there's going to be a hearing at the beginning of October, which is just a short hearing, and then it gets underway. But there's it's probably quite tedious initially because there's a whole lot of documentary evidence, and at the moment it's not actually clear how much of that is going to be made public and how much the police are going to be allowed to hide behind their wall of neither confirm nor deny in respect of everything that's been brought out into the open so far. They've refused to conform to deny anything. So there's a way to go, and we're not quite sure how it's going to shape up. And
not the case that some of the some of the cops involved are actually involved in instigating certain activities,
yeah,
that led to people getting arrested and stuff like this.
Yes, I think there'll be more and more of that coming to light as it goes on. And I think, you know, for anybody who has been involved in any campaign since 1968, which was when the Special Demonstration Squad was set up, and which is within the remit of this public inquiry, you might want to look at taking a keener interest in the public inquiry. There's a website, Campaign Opposing Police Surveillance, and another one, the Undercover Research Group, that have both got information about the public inquiry on them. If you think that your group might have been infiltrated, or it's possible it has, then, you know, maybe look into applying for core participant status, which enables you to get representation and also to potentially see the documents in the case. So, yeah, check out those websites.
Could I just ask, were there any children born to the women involved in this group with these police?
There are at least 3 children that have been born to undercover policemen, and there may be more. It's absolutely shocking that the police could even begin to think that to, you know, use women and to, you know, effectively use the children as well in this way could be an acceptable thing to do. It's just really quite unbelievable that that's gone on. So.
Okay.
What type of, without going to get paranoid about it, but have you got any advice?
DNA test.
Okay.
Well, no, have you got advice yet to anyone, what signs to look out for this someone?
Not with a black beard. BMW.
Well, actually, my main advice is don't get paranoid, because actually the one thing that the police want us to do, and why they're infiltrating our movements, is to undermine our movements and to prevent change. And the worst thing that we can do is to all start pointing the finger at each other and suspecting each other, and then refusing to work with each other and becoming completely ineffective. So don't go on a witch hunt. And actually, most of the undercover police that have been discovered so far have actually been extremely popular, well-rounded, apparently well-rounded people. It's not the kind of the person who always causes problems overtly. They may be poking things from behind the scenes. I don't know, but it's not actually possible to tell. And I speak as someone who lived with an undercover policeman for 2 years, and there was no way that I suspected him during that time. It's not like, oh yeah, look at the shoes. That's because I've heard that said so many times. It's the shoes that give them away or something like that. The common denominator.
Shining your shoes every day and looking in the air.
Well, the common denominator has been having no kind of traceable back history, feigning a breakdown when they leave, leaving and going to live abroad. Many of them have used that. Having a van, which they drive lots of people to protest on, and what's the other one I was going to say? Getting into positions like treasurer or membership secretary or things like that, where they've got access to information. However, lots of other people have those things too. So that does not mean that if anybody ticks any one of those boxes, that means that they're an undercover police officer. If you really do have genuine concerns, I think there is some advice on the undercover research group about how to go about checking people out. But it really is important not to go on a witch hunt and not to make accusations that are unfounded, because it really does destroy movements, and that is doing the police's work, the state's work for them. So, most of the time, actually, it doesn't make that much difference. And some of the things, like John, who was my partner, who was in that video, he actually organised benefit gigs for the McDougal support campaign. So most of the time, they're actually forced to do things that are beneficial to some of our campaigns in order to stay involved. So, I think, seriously, what has happened is a grievous series of human rights abuses. However, we can actually take heart from the fact that they infiltrate our movements, in that they know that if we communicate with other people about alternative ideas, we can be effective, we can bring about change. And I think that's the key message to take from all of this, really, is the importance of sharing your vision of the world that you want to see, because what we're up against is corporations and media and government that basically promote their idea of their society on a daily basis to everybody. And so if you want to create a different society, we need to be out there putting the alternative so that people see that there is an alternative, because otherwise people just say, well, this is what we've got, what can we do? So, that's my key message, is keep on at it. If you want a better world, keep on fighting for it. So.
Feel free to stay around and have some dialogue for a little bit. Are we okay?
You're okay.